performance for the construction industry performance program that are being looked at. And I ended by talking about the last bullet where we have export promotion as well as national infrastructure maintenance strategy, which we're doing in partnership with the Department of Public Works to make sure that we don't only provide infrastructure, but also there is maintenance that is being done for the infrastructure that has been created. Okay, slide 24 is also the remainder of the indicators for the CIP, where we talk about the programmatic approach in terms of work that is being done. And you will see on the solid bullets there, we've got various fees that we would like to charge for as a best practice fee for contractors that are doing work of a significant amount in terms of a threshold, and making sure that those fees that we generate from those contractors are used for contractor development to anchor the SDA, the Skills Development Agency, that I spoke about earlier. If, for instance, all contractors that are doing 100 million worth of job are actually paying 0.2% of their fees towards the Skills Development Agency, this pool of money can be put together to make sure that there is contractor development that takes place within construction projects through the SDA itself.
Another thing that you are saying, here's something good that we can do.
Yes. Chair, in this regard, I will, in terms of the APP and the stretch plan, there is continuity in the work that we do. And I must admit that there are many things that are coming into the future that are coming with the introspection that we have done within the CIDB. But also, I'm sure during questions and answers, we will be able to reflect on what is happening currently. Because of the brief in terms of the APP and the search plan, we are forward-looking than now and before.
Chairperson, sorry. But for the last time, to the shop steward, but then I think, because I'm sharing your concern, and you noticed when the issue of corruption came up, and it's not just in South Africa, by the way, this sector internationally is renowned to be a corruption-prone sector. I was nodding with you, but I think, you see, I think, and it probably cuts across all of the portfolio committees currently, what we're asking entities and departments to do is to talk to the annual performance, the APP and the strategic plan, and it's forward-looking. And it's frustrating because, so I think as the colleague has responded, the way in which the input is structured is to say what we plan to do, how in this financial year going forward, how it aligns to our strategic plan and how it aligns to our budget allocation to some extent as well. And so, yeah, I think it's a bit of a problem with the way we set it up. So I'm agreeing with your irritation, but also wanting to act as a job steward for these. But I think we should use questions then to ask them. Ask the entities, yes, okay, but what makes you so sure you're going to be able to do this, given your track record?
Deputy Minister, shop steward. It's not irritation. The strategic plans, as you correctly point out, we are looking at the future. But whilst we are looking at the future, that should be based on our past practice.
Agreed.
What have we learned? What do we seek to correct? That's the emphasis that I'm making there. Your hopes and wishes for the future should be based on the reality of our experience.
Yeah.
What were the challenges? What were the successes? How do we sharpen our practice for the future? So it's in that sense. Correctly, we are saying this is what we'll do in the future. But it must link back to where we come from. What objective reality has informed and taught us. Please continue, sir.
Thank you very much, sir. On page 25 is the next program, which is the procurement and delivery management, the one which I said is there to provide leadership as well as support client departments in terms of developing and promote and monitor uniform application of our prescripts through all organs of state and industry stakeholders, including procurement standards, construction procurement reform, improved infrastructure delivery management practices, and the CIDP code of conduct. That is the purpose for the program. The objective there is to provide leadership to stakeholders and to stimulate sustainable growth, reform, and improvement of the construction sector for effective delivery and the industry's enhanced role in the construction economy. The expected outcome overall of this is an enhanced compliance to construction procurement and infrastructure delivery management. So in terms of contractor development, in terms of procurement and making sure that we have uniform standards by which we tender, in terms of making sure that we utilize the same basis in terms of the work that is going out, this is the program that makes sure that there is uniformity in terms of government entities, departments, as well as municipalities. There are various targets, Chair, that have been put together. I will just go through the main target of each of these to save time. Improving public sector construction, procurement, and delivery management. Very critical to make sure that all the work that is going out through public sector is actually coming from a well thought through process of delivery of how this work is going to make sure that there is delivery of the infrastructure, but also the process is above board. I think the main thrust in this program is making sure that the process as well as the project are up to the standard that is required in terms of infrastructure provision. Slide number 27, the square bullet there also, I'll just go through the square bullets, improving the effectiveness of client capacitation. CIDB, at its core mandate, is the capacitation of clients, public sector clients, to make sure that there is capacity to package these projects in such a way that they can be delivered effectively. Also, there could be contractor development and so forth, all other spin-offs that come with the territory of providing infrastructure are encapsulated there. The second bullet in squares, the implementation of the anti-corruption model. Here we're talking implementation, we're not talking developing the anti-corruption model. It has been developed by this program, and this is a model that is going to ensure that we are able to see red flags coming rather than always be reacting to corruption that has already been taken care of. And I'm sure that we can articulate in more of this model in terms of our space where we operate from. Improving compliance monitoring and enforcement, this is one area again that needs us to wear or to put on magnifying glasses. In that, I said there is shortcoming in terms of client departments in registering projects onto the CIDB. We need to tighten up and make sure that clients do register. So the monitoring and enforcement needs to start biting in terms of making sure that we get maximum compliance from clients as well as from contractors in our prescriptions. Chair, I'll move to slide number 28, the Provincial Offices and Contractor Development Program. The purpose, again, is to make sure that there's contractor development, number one. Number two, to make sure that our footprint in provincial offices is effective. We've got offices that can manage, offices that can service contractors and the construction industry, including clients that are existing in the provincial offices. If they need support on procurement matters, contractor development matters, they should be able to go to our offices and get help from our offices. So that is the key performance summary for TCG, which is on page 28, Chairperson. In terms of slide number 29, the key target there is Enterprise Development Unit, which is in that program, as well as strategic objectives that are encapsulated under the development unit of that program. I think the objectives, they are listed as expanding and entrenching the national contractor development awareness, as well as contractor development implementation, and making sure that there is effective development of contractors and the environment is conducive. There are programmatic efforts within clients to actually make sure that contractor development does take place. Chair slide number 30. In terms of the provincial offices, the offices will ensure the following: an efficient and effective registration service for contractors, CIDB provincial offices service customer satisfaction, we do monitor and have an ongoing survey, a pad on each office where contractors, after they've done business with us, they can rate the service that they have received on a pad by themselves before they leave the office in all of our provincial offices. Supporting improvement of client body capability and capacity on construction procurement. This is the responsibility, again, of the provincial offices where they are. Pursuing sustainable growth of contractors through client and contractor awareness and programmatic support. And lastly, promoting customer relations and provincial office efficiency and sound management. And I must say, Chair, that all of our offices within the provincial space are housed within the Department of Public Works offices. And I'm happy the Minister is here, because we're getting, as the child of the department, we're getting a lot of support from Public Works in terms of the spaces that are rent-free from Public Works, as well as maintenance of such spaces. Otherwise, it would have been difficult to have footprint throughout the country without that assistance. And ongoing support, indeed, that we get in terms of our strategy, the sharpening of our tools, the oversight that is provided by the GPW cannot be understated in this reduction. And I'm very grateful indeed that the Deputy Minister is in our midst today. I will head over to the CFO. She has traveled all the way from Pretoria, and she will just do two slides, that is the budget as well as the staffing complements. Briefly, please, madam, as well as the manager, who will just go through performance. How do we do? In terms of the work that we do, how do we do as AIDB? Thank you very much.
Thank you to the CFO who has traveled all the way from Pretoria. I'm not sure where others have traveled from.
For two slides only.
Madam, we are in your able hands to hear where the money goes. I'm concerned when it says that the travel stays in this industry.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'm just taking you through what's contained on page 32 of the slide. I won't necessarily read the amounts and the programs that are listed there. Suffice to say that in terms of our allocation of budget for this current year, 2014-15, the total budget is 128.5 million. You will note that in terms of the CEO has mentioned that the CIDB has got four core programs that deal with specifically the mandate of the CIDB, and those are the first four programs that are listed on that page. So in terms of the specific allocation, if you look at the provincial and contractor development, their allocation is in the region of about 31 million. Now, the bulk of these budgets across all programs, the bulk of the budget does go towards staffing. And that's essentially given the nature of the work that we do, that we are a registration regulatory organization. So as a result, a lot of our, a big chunk of our funding goes towards human resources in terms of the staffing that assists with registration matters. So in the provincial and contractor development, you will also see when I go through the second slide in terms of the numbers of people, it's all the people that work across all provinces in our provincial offices around the country. And then in construction industry performance, and that's where we do all our best practices, our standards, our practice notes that advise in terms of the compliance methods that have to be complied with. It's the allocation there is just under 10 million. And that's essentially where the bulk of our research stuff actually takes place. And then in procurement and delivery management, it's 11 million. And this is a unit that actually deals with most of the investigations that come through to the CIDB in terms of compliance matters and mainly around capacitating client departments, municipalities, in terms of procurement-related issues. They work closely with the National Treasury as well on issues of construction procurement and advising on that front. And then the contractor register services, that's essentially, they work hand in hand with the first program for provincial and contractor development, because they deal with registration, the grading of contractors, and that's where the system that also registers projects, that's where it also resides. And they deal with the assessment of those applications from contractors that register with the CIDB. And then the last two programs are basically the support programs of the CIDB. That is the CEO's office with an allocation of just under 12 million. And what some of the things that actually take place there, the issues of governance and risk management, communication, stakeholder management, they happen within the CEO's office. And lastly, what is termed as other objectives is actually corporate services, and that's the bulk of the support services. We deal mainly with registration, so our IT resides within this specific component, and our HR, our finance, facilities, as well as supply chain management, and that allocation is just under 42 million, thus giving us a total of 128.5 million. The sources of our revenue is actually mainly twofold. It's the government grant that we get from the Department of Public Works, which is in the region of 77 million, and the balance then of about 48 million or so is the registration fees that we collect that are paid by contractors when they register, when they do annual reviews of their registrations and so forth. So, and in terms of then the allocation, if we look at the 128, in terms of the split by economic classification, about 79 million, just under 80 million goes towards compensation of employees. So only about 50 million then gets left in terms of us then being able to carry the mandate forward in terms of the deliverables that we are expected to deal with, other than issues of human resources. So that's essentially what our budget in a nutshell is about. And then through you, Honourable Chair, I'll then take the House through slide 34. That just deals with our staffing issues. That particular slide, what is contained there is actually the approved organogram in terms of what the board has approved. And it's not necessarily the entire number that is currently the structure as it stands. So if one wants to then look at the core programs that actually deal with the mandate of the CIDB and that carry forward the strategies of the CIDB, it would be from the second one, construction register services. There's about 64 positions there, and the bulk of those positions are actually people that assist with registration. It's the help desk, it's registration, it's the assessors, and that's where quality checks are done in terms of the submissions that are done by contractors when they register. And then construction industry performance, there's about 9 positions there. And if we tally that to the budget, we have said the allocation there is about 9.9 million. And that's where most of our research is done. So it's a very specialized program in terms of the people that are there. They deal specifically with issues where they advise on the standards, on the best practices, and so forth. And then on procurement and delivery, the budget allocation around 9 million, there's 9 positions there. Those are the people that help with the client capacitation. They advise departments, municipalities, as well as work closely with Treasury and other stakeholders in terms of compliance matters, procurement issues, and so forth. And then on the provincial offices and contractor development, the budget allocation we had said is about 30 million. There's 76 positions, and I said that particular program works closely with the contractor register services because they essentially do registration at a provincial level, and they focus mainly on the entry levels, which is grade one, and then they do the viewing of documents for from grade two or upwards, which they then forward to head office, where grade two upwards is done, as well as the assessment and the quality checks of the registration documents that are done. And then lastly, the CEO's office, which has 13 positions plus 4 additional to establishment positions. That's basically, I said there's issues of audit, risk, as well as governance and communication and stakeholder management. The 4 additional to establishments, the 4 ATEs, it's basically a process where we are starting to run a process where we are testing the issue of bringing internally the internal audit services as opposed to fully outsourcing it. So we are running it on a trial basis, hence we then have contractor positions or contract positions where those people that are appointed there are appointed on a contract basis whilst we then test how the issue of the internal audit will take place whilst we run it concurrently with the service provider who has been assisting us previously. And then in corporate services, there's 53 positions, there's 5 units within corporate services which deal essentially with what I mentioned earlier, finances, SVM, IT, facilities, as well as HR. So that gives us a total in terms of the approved organogram for the organization of 224. But we have less than that because there are a couple of positions under 20 that we do not necessarily have funding for. But there are positions that have been identified that they will assist us in terms of fully addressing our responsibilities and our mandates. So that's basically what I wanted to present. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam, all the way from Pretoria. Now we realize why. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair and honorable members. The slide which I'm going to cover is slide 5. The slide will just give you a picture in terms of our performance. As you are aware that when we produce the strategic plan and annual performance plan, we are guided by the framework of performance information, which is subjected to external audit review. So in terms of CIDP's performance and compliance, I'll just give you in the last three years how we performed. The area which they cover, normally they cover that we submit documents on time. We don't have a problem in that. If you look in the first year, second year, and third year, an update. When we were preparing this presentation, we set interim for 2013-14. It has been finalized, so the picture which is reflected there is still the same. And then the second thing which they look also, they look at the misalignment of the strategic plan and the APP. We had the problem in 2011 and 12, but in the two successive years, we didn't have any problem. We are managing to address that. And then the next thing which also they look is our indicators, whether are well-defined. First year, we had a major problem because in terms of their findings, we had a problem of 53%, which when they express an opinion, it will be a qualified opinion. But we have reduced that in 2012 to 13 to 9. And then this year, on 13-14, we had a minor one, which sort of like a grammatical error, which led into the indicators not well defined. So it consisted 5%, which is acceptable. And then the other thing which we have, it was the portfolio of evidence, because whatever we say we have delivered, we need to have a proof. So in the first year, we had 36%, which we didn't have a portfolio of evidence. But so far, it has been addressed, because if you look at 12-13 and 13-14, it's none. So we are doing well on that. And then if we look indicators and SMART criteria, it's almost the same. But this one, the SMART criteria focus on the targets. Okay, so in terms of our targets, which were not meeting the SMART criteria, in first year it was 72%. And then in 12-13 we didn't have anything. And then in 13-14 now we had 5%. And then the last one in terms of our performance is to look at our targets, whether are we achieving all our targets. So in terms of the requirement, the minimum which we can get is either 80% or we achieve all of them. So in 2011 and 12, we managed to achieve 75%, which was below the threshold of 80%, which we didn't do well. And then also 12-13, we didn't do well because we didn't achieve the minimum of 80%. But in 13-14, we managed to achieve 80%, more than 80%. Okay. So in nutshell, in terms of performance, we are improving, because also if they were expressing an opinion on performance information, we did achieve unqualified opinion, so we are doing well on that. And then the next slide is just give you an indication of how many targets we'll be working towards in 2014-15. as we highlighted to you that we will be focusing on the core programs, and then if you look in terms of the core programs, the CRS will have 6 targets, CIP will have 14 targets, and then PDM 9, and then PCD 7. So all in all, we need to achieve 6 targets within this financial year. Okay, that's it on my side. Over to the people.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the presentation that we had prepared, it has come to conclusion, and we are available for question session. Thank you.
I now avail the opportunity to members to pose questions, make their comments. I've just been checking your contribution, and the area that I might have missed, and I don't yet recall anybody having spoken to unfunded priorities. So I'm not sure where you cover that, or there's no need for that. But that's just my observation. I speak under correction unless you've covered it somewhere. But I'm not aware of this. Members, let's start with you.
Okay. Yeah, well, sure to see. So I'm getting my presentation. Full presentation kune health and safety. But it's not much enough. Ngoba uma ukhuluma health and safety, ukhuluma kahle kahle ngempilo zabantu abasebenza kwi-construction. Where kufanele kube kuthi kule presentation previous bekunjani, then yini engifuna ukuyilungisa, kungabi just health and safety, singabi naso kahle i-stats ukuthi bekwenzekani, yini edala ukuthi kube nayo. But it's very important to know much better than the presentation as it will be. Augustine kune Public Works unayo into women in construction and youth in construction. Kodwa nakhona kwi presentation ukufinqa kakhulu in such a way that akukho esingakukhuluma. Ukhulume nje nge youth in construction, not women in construction. So mhlambi uma kuleyo mase uresponda mhlambi talk much. Okokugcina, state of the nation address upresident loko enento ye job creation. Uma ke kule construction kukhona ama skills development, yini ayenzayo ukwenza I job creation or akenzi lutho? Ngiyabonga kakhulu.
Ngiyabonga honorable Job. The next hand I saw was honorable Mubu. Followed by Baba Stole, and then I've noted the two of you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think it was quite useful for some of us who are new members of the committee, not new members of Parliament, but new members of this committee, because there's quite a lot of information that some of us didn't know. And thank you very much for that. It was a bit lengthy, but too much information is better than none. Chair, I just want to get clarity on how because I'll call that the deputy minister in his short steward role, mentioned that the two boards of the two organizations are incoming, and they have not been, I don't know what the brigade term is it legally constituted? I don't know. But my question is,
just clarify that they've been appointed, but they start their function from the 1st of August.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that clarification. But my question is, how is the board appointed? And what is the numbers of the board in terms of composition? But also, what role does the parliament have in appointing board members? Like, who would have the SABC, for example, board appointed by parliament? So I want to know, to what extent do we play a role in that appointment of those members? Secondly, your breakdown of this halving, the CFO, I just want to get an indication of what's the breakdown in terms of women, men, Indian, colored, black, and, you know, I don't know what term you have for that, but just an indication of what sort of composition you have in your staff. Thirdly, CEO, could you just give an indication of what is the net worth of the construction industry in South Africa? When you look at it and say, overall, this is what, I don't mind if it's the estimate. But you also mentioned the role of the NHBRC as opposed to your organization. And your role, their role in the construction of homes. I'm asking this question because of what we have seen in the past regarding the shoddy work that goes towards construction of RDP houses. And government spends a lot of money there. But a lot of these houses don't last. So what's you said there's going to be future work between you and the NHBRC, but I don't know to what extent you have a role to play in there. Thank you very much, Chaps.
Thank you very much, sir. Baba Sporji.
Chairperson, first of all, I want to comment the report. But my concern, Chairperson, is it seems that this report has just cut and paste. Why I'm saying this report, I was perusing the report of CIDP, the annual report of 2010, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012. If you check this report, they are the same. There's not much difference from their first report. And the other thing, Chairperson, is the rating of contractors. They are talking about grade one. And until now, I don't think that we have exactly number of blacks who have been upgraded from grade one to grade nine. If we can have how many contractors that have been upgraded from grade one to grade nine, because if you check their report, it just says grade nine and grade one, but there's no specifications. And the other one, Chairperson, is the one that was asked by honorable members about youth women, if they can give us a breakdown of how many youth in construction, how many women in construction, how many disabled people in construction. And another one, Chairperson, is that one of the budget system. Sometimes they can make us understand their budget because they have programs and they have sub programs. But the budget methodology of their programs doesn't talk to the sub programs. If they can just clarify that. And the last one, Chairperson, is that investigation. I have a concern, Chairperson, about the anti-corruption strategy.
because the money that was budgeted for this was, I think, is more than 11 million for anti-corruption. But if they say there is no profit talking to those anti-corruption, it means we are facing with the crisis. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable member, thank you. Baba Masango.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks for the presentation also. Yeah, I'm also just worried with the issue of, because I did serve in housing, CIDB and housing coming together. It just worries me. I don't even understand. Are they saying actually they are doing the same job together? And they must really clarify what do they mean. Because if I'm registered with CIDB, I'm expecting to be graded. And when I'm registered with NHBRC, there's nothing like grading in NHBRC. It's just being registered to ensure that the house that I'm building, actually, the person benefit, should something happen, then you can go and claim because that house actually has been registered with NHBRC. So there, I don't understand. Maybe they might just explain. And then when you come to this register of projects, I heard that they got a problem with public institution. But I didn't hear what is the problem with private sector, because they both did mention private sector also. But the other one is, I heard the presenter saying they will take departments to Auditor General if they didn't register those houses. Now, I don't understand, because the Auditor General, if really it is his job or her job to do that, he would have picked those things long ago. I don't know which act or rule or whatever regulation is now going to make them not to be good in the auditor's book if they don't register those things. Maybe if you can also explain them. Yes, I also want to go to youth unemployment. You know, all over the place we've got youth that have gone for construction, others are building houses, they've got certificate, and they've been encouraged to open their own CCs, and they have done that. But still nothing comes of it. You know, they are sitting with CCs and they are being asked to be cooperative. And they have done that, but they are still stuck with those CVs or whatever certificate. There is nothing happening. Maybe they must just explain also that. The vacancy, we didn't hear so much. We heard that there is less than 20 vacancies, but some vacancies are critical. And until they tell us which vacancies are that are not filled, because you cannot have a vacancy that is critical, it's not as filled. We want to know which vacancies are not filled. Grading remains the problem in this CIDB. We have a pile of people just sitting in the smallest group, and we didn't hear the challenges. What are the challenges to have people stuck there? We only hear of this colluding, but we don't hear what is really happening. And I just see it seems as if this grading is also being done in province, and unless someone at national is actually looking at that, people are going to be stuck there until, I mean, and I just heard also that they are making sure that the big contractors, if they go overseas and do, they must take the small, but we don't know what are the consequences of that if they don't do. Sometimes we have to have consequences so that people can comply. Thank you, sir.
Honorable member.
Thank you, CFO and other members of the team for the broad presentation. However, I've got some fundamental concerns here. My fundamental concern, sir, here is what I see as some kind of passing of the buck. Passing of the buck in the sense that the institution presents itself as the one with the responsibility to drive and hence delivery management. And then somewhere during the presentation, CEO stresses the point that CIDB itself does not build. We accept that. And they say they give directions kind of standards are interpreted as that
to municipalities and government departments to say, in order for our function as the CIDB to be executed, you do ABC. That's my fundamental problem here. We have got an institution that gets funding of close to 80 million, but it expects its fundamental job to be executed by another institution. I think that is the main reason why one, two, as well as myself, speakers are saying nothing but basic failure on the part of the institution to give us exact figures as to how many people are targeted from year to year to be upgraded from this level to the next level. Because now they point out that it's such and such a municipality, such and such a government department that has not given us the reports. With over 220 people, you still do not have one out of those people who says, I am responsible to make sure that so many contractors, I am, not delegated to somebody else, I am responsible for making sure that so many contractors come on board and get registered and then they move up. A regional report, say, would be saying to us, out of so many that have been taken on in the last term or last year, so many have been developed to such and such a level. The constraining factors, as the Honorable Speaker has indicated, were ABC. Then we can give the necessary support or advice. That's what I call my fundamental problem. Now, as a result of a miss in that fundamental, I talk of enterprise development. I've gone to page 29 three times trying to understand the exact role in the sense of development. I find that they position themselves just to broadly support as well as to kind of, let me see, just going to refer to this page 29 now. Okay, there's a page here, Enterprise Development, yes, on page 29. The ED unit is specifically mandated to provide guidance and support to clients. Now, I have run enterprises. I have actually been a government employee of a parastatal, rather, right, doing enterprise development. This is too superficial. Unless there is another institution again that they have developed, or rather that they have delegated to actually do enterprise development. It is one thing, Chair, for a building contractor to be assigned a function, go and build a school. And because it does not have the enterprise element, you know, he'll finish the job, but he'll be poorer than the guy who never got that contract. We have seen so many African people do that. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's okay with that. This is too shallow. Again, it links with that fundamental problem that I indicated, that it's superficial, the work that the CIDB is doing. It's not reaching. Ndabo, I think it's money. A paraffinic, this course. That's what we normally say. Okay? Now, last two concerns. What is the meaning? Again, it's a fundamental thing. What is the meaning? What is your understanding of the word transformation? What do you mean by transformation? Because nowhere here do you detail as to what you will say we have achieved by moving train A from station A to station B. You're not specific. You're roundabout. We're here as this committee to make sure that people who voted the current government to power, they must see this transformation happening. They must see. But if we don't have any word, any paragraph, not even a sentence, that defines in your own terms what you understand by transformation, then you say to us, this is what we presented to you. You accepted this as our definition of transformation and working on that basis. We don't seem to see that. So we may be putting the wrong, right questions to the wrong institution. That's a risk we're faced with here. We may be accusing you of something that you were never expected to do in the first place. Last one. Use choice of words. Again, it's a fundamental thing. Page 4. Promote is the chosen words to use there. on bullet point two in squares. I would rather we come out boldly, because if you listen to the state of the nation, I'm not a member of the ruling party, I must remind people, but if you remember the state of the nation, there was talk of a radical approach. Today, we should be substituting words like promote with words ensure, because that's what we want to see. That's what the voting public want to say, ensure, not just promote. Promote is kind of lightly, I'll push it a bit, you know, I'll make sure it's the second sentence, according you say, to him getting from standard 4 to standard 3, to standard 5, I'm just promoting this. But in a situation that's funded by government, this specific post would be, say, ensure. The second one, participation. Immediately after the word promote, should be development. We should be coming out, we should be reviewing a chair, you know, the way we approach things, because people out there are crying, for change. And lastly, chair, one of the major, I was in the construction industry, one of the major causes for small contractors, and most of them who start off as subcontractors, is a non-payment by main contractors. And I'm sure a whole lot of people are aware of that. And then the department washes its hands and says, no, that was your private business. How about making sure that as these subcontractors get registered, otherwise there's no point in registering them, as they get registered on a certain construction program or project, let me put it that way, then the department should be interested to know, have you paid your subcontractors? Because these people just say, they know that the government department will come nowhere. It's a private arrangement between them and the subcontractors and the poor fellow. I tell you, we have had stories. People literally go down. Because they're not being paid by the main contractors. It hurts when you come across those people, related or not related to them, which are huge amounts. It's not something light we're getting on now.
Sorry. Honorable Member, thanks. Ma'am Adams.
Baie dankie, voorzitter, vir die geleentheid. Ag, maar voorzitter, vir die geleentheid om te praat. Het is altijd die nadeel as een mens het laatste praat, dat het allemaal omtrent gedek wat jy wil sê. Maar te begin,
Je kan nie seker as die laatste een om te praat, daar gaan nog ander stages vir verdere vraag en versoeke en vir mense antwoorde te gee. So moet nie so seker as die laatste nie.
Is wat ek bedoel, voorzitter, na so kromp reeds gepraat het. Ek wil begin weer vir die CEO baie geluk te sê. Ek dink dit is 'n veertjie, besied as DB, wat hulle vrou aangestel het. En ons glo dat daar die saak van die vrouwe sal versterk, veral in die komende maand van Augustus. Malibongwe. En, voorzitter, hier is verskriklik baie akronieme gebruik. Die meeste van ons is heeltemal niet by hierdie portfolio en ons wil rechtig vir vereningsvolle deelname hee. En dan moet ons elke keer teruggeblaai om te kyk wat die akroniem beteken. So in die vervolg, kyk daarna. Ek gaan het skyfie vir skyfie doen, slide vir slide. Ek wil begin deur na die organogram op skyfie 34, slide 34. Daar is ons posities uit ingesit, ons weet nie wie mannelik, vrouwelik en hoeveel jeug is daar is nie. Jy weet, die werkloosheid van die jeugdiges is een groot probleem in ons land. En as ons kan daarop aanspraak maak, dat ons jeugdiges het, en wat van een stelsel van interns, voor job creation, het jy dus zoiets? Ek kom nie daar, dit achterin. Dan, achter voorzitter, daar is hierdie ATE's, die interne auditing, en daar is 4 posities. Nou, as jylle 9 provincies, daar 9 provincies, waar is hierdie interne auditeers, waar is hulle gestationeer? Ek weet, is contractueel. Maar betekent dat hulle moet van provincie tot provincie reis en dan kom het in dat ek nou sê van die interns wat julle in diens kan neem. En as julle so groot organisatie is wat met soveel geld gaan werk, dan denk ek die instelling van een interne auditeringsstelsel is eindelijk noodzakelijk. Zodat ons weet waarmee wordt hierdie departement of hierdie afdeling eindelijk gekoppeld. Het leen hem toe tot baie ondinge. Dan, kameraad, ek het gepraat oor die vacancy rate. Ons weet nie of daar een vacancy rate is nie, wat die geslag is nie. Wat is die transformatiestrategie? As ons begin met die saunas, dan word daar gepraat oor transformatie. Wat een rol gaan julle speel om werklike transformatie in Suid-Afrika teweeg te bring? Ten opzichte van vrouwe, ten opzichte van jeugdiges, ten opzichte van mense met disabilities. Ons sal blij wees as julle dit vir ons kan uitwis. En dan, voorzitter, ek keer nou weer terug na die skyfies. Daar, by slide 24, praat die aanbieder gepraat van skills, stichting van die Skills Development Agency. Je weet, daar is so baie projekte wat voorsien word. Ek geloof mos, een mens moet tyd koppel aan goed, sodat dit meetbaar kan wees. Ek kom nergens achter dat daar tydgelewe is of tydskale is wanneer die goed ingestel gaan word en wat die target is om dit te bereik. Die code of conduct wat julle hiervan praat, hoe bekend is dit onder julle kliënte? En dan my laaste vraag. Public Works is departement van concurrency. Hoe beïnvloed die CIDB sy werking ten opzichte van die concurrency wat daar is? Dank u.
Baie dank u, mevrouw Adams. If I may, to perhaps just translate a few of the elements that the Honorable Member Adams raised. The first point was that kindly bear in mind that there are a number of new members to the Portfolio Committee. So when we utilize acronyms in our presentations, they are lost and they have to reference the acronyms and thus lose the drift of the presentations. The other issue is that there's a particular slide that speaks about gender and youth, but there isn't a breakdown in terms of numbers. There's another slide that refers to transformation, but we need to unpack that particular slide more with information. When we speak about transformation, what does it say about youth empowerment and also with regard to people with disabilities? And then other parts of the presentation outlines a number of objectives, but there are no requisite time frames that speak to those objectives. Bias may buy a loss for talent. Then there's the issue of concurrency. Whilst you note down those points, I must say that Akona, I'll take responsibility for something that we did not foresee. Namely, the ideal situation would have been that we take this presentation. The merit and scope of the issues is such that it warrants a whole day just for it alone. So the mistake that we made was to schedule two presentations, and we have hardly gone through the one. So I would like to say to everyone, obviously, we will not be able to ask for ground the issues that we'd like to, and in all fairness, nor would the presenters have an equal opportunity to proffer the responses that they could and should. So let's regard this as an initial engagement, so that the second time round we can give the requisite time and plan to give the requisite time, you see. Because what we are going to do now is to be under pressure and you telegraph issues. It's not going to do justice to what we seek to do here. So unfortunately, also to respect the other presentation, that's true, we'd have to sort of limit the time that we can continue with this. Perhaps the ideal thing to do would be to stop at the number of questions that have been posed and then allow the entity to respond to the questions posed. But at the back of our minds, let's just bear in mind that it's not our final engagement. The work of both entities is such that there should be a constructive, vibrant engagement on an ongoing basis. It can't be here that you come here as if you are going to table your annual report and that's the next time that we'll see you again. So let's just bear that in mind. Unfortunately, today, this is the situation that we have occasioned. Perhaps before I give you the opportunity to respond to those questions, there's an issue where we have spoken about the compensation for employees for the 2014-2015 year. On page 15, there's a slide there. We mentioned the figure as 80.6 million. And then on page 71, we mention the same issue as costing 88.5 million. So we just like to know what's the correct figure. This is in your annual performance plan. So could we have a rejoinder to the questions, comments, posed? And as I said, be mindful that I'm saying that. Seek to address the questions posed as much as you can, but we also appreciate that in this encounter, you won't be able to give all the detailed information that perhaps you could. Thank you, sir. And all those who would assist in responding to the questions thus posed.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the questions. I can say from the onset that the questions that are coming through from the House really demonstrate the magnitude of the challenges that are faced, not only by the CIDP, but the construction industry as a whole. And I think we mustn't lose sight of the fact of where we come from as a country, as we look at any other sector, and appreciate the magnitude of the challenge at hand. Despite all those challenges, I think there are things that if we were given an opportunity, Chair, we would bring to the fore to look at them and celebrate some of the achievements that have been done. In this regard, I will go straight to the questions, and also just to point out that we have brought extra copies of the APP and the strategic plan. If they are required, we will leave them behind, Chairperson. Number two, we welcome the opportunity to come back to this House. Now we have recorded the questions that have come through, but also we can prepare and come straight to some of the questions that we cannot answer now because we have not prepared the actual numbers and the actual statistics and the actual growth of the construction industry. We have that information. Remember, there is a component within CIDB that's doing industry performance and measuring all of that. That information can be sourced from that program and be brought to the House. So we will try and deal with the questions that we can answer right now, And then if there are questions we cannot answer, apologies, we will welcome an opportunity to come back and deal with such questions. Thank you, Chair. The first question, I think, was on the issue of health and safety, which is an issue that the CIDB has been looking at in terms of surveys and research that we have been doing in the construction industry. And I must say that it's only now in the APP going forward, or in the strategic planning going forward, that we are looking at going in depth into looking at how can we now, besides what we're seeing in terms of the fatalities and in terms of the accidents that are happening on site, what is it that we can do now as CIDB to take off some of the points that we give to contractors because of the incidents that happen on the various sites. So we're introducing a system of demerit of taking off points from contractors who have more and more accidents. And I think this is a positive step. We have not brought statistics of where we come from, where we are right now, and what we will be doing, and to what extent are we going to be reducing those accidents. But in terms of the question itself, we have noted that when we come back, we need to give the statistics of what are our projections of curtailing accidents going into the future compared to the present. The issue of women in construction, Chair, is a huge issue, coupled with youth as well as people living with disabilities. Also, within the CIDB, there is another category that we have added, and unfortunately we haven't considered this extensively in our presentation, but these are areas that are receiving attention. The women in rail, which we're doing in partnership with Transnet, to make sure that there are women who go into the hardcore engineering categories of the construction industry, by making sure that within the rail component there is empowerment of women there. There are projects that we can bring to the fore that we are supporting, that are speaking to women in rail, women in construction, youth in construction, although as the Honourable Member Fultani has explicitly said that CIDB does not have infrastructure projects that are driving this empowerment, but regulates and makes sure that the atmosphere and the environment is conducive for these developments to take place. And I think with the incoming board, perhaps it's something that we need to look at as CIDB and be progressive and say, what are the institutional arrangements that we must put in place ourselves to make sure that we kickstart and make sure that the train is ongoing, rather than just only, you know, regulating, put a stick one side and a carrot on the other, and so on. And I'm happy the chairperson, incoming chairperson, is now missed also, you know, to understand the frustration that is coming from the House in this regard. Job creation, I know, is a big component. There are targets that have been put by the Department of Public Works through EPWP and other initiatives. And I think as the CIDB, and in terms of our strategy, we buy 100% onto the strategy of public works. And we are complementing the efforts of public works in terms of our contribution in making sure that on building sites, we must introduce labor component, which speaks to the targets that we have set for ourselves as a country in terms of job creation. So in terms of ourselves as CIDB, I see a responsibility where we need to look at appropriate technologies that are going to make use of labor force that is available, rather than the machinery and so on, whenever opportunities present themselves, and make sure that we actually advise and give guidance and ensure that there is job creation in construction sites to complement the efforts of the Department of Public Works, as well as other departments that are tasked with infrastructure provision. In terms of the second question, how is the board appointed? What is the number of the board members? What is the role of Parliament in the appointment of the board? I think the in terms of legislation, the board is appointed by the Minister of Public Works. Currently, we have 12 members in the board. The responsibility of Parliament, I would not be able to answer in terms of the board, and would require assistance or would require to flag this one, Chair, if not the Deputy Minister.
Basically, I mean, one should refer to the legislation, the founding legislation, CRDB, which indicates that in this case the selection of the board is done by the Minister, and there's criteria that have to be fulfilled. So that's legislation passed by this Parliament, or previous Parliaments. So it's not like the SABC appointment process.
Okay, there was a question also on the demographics of the staff of the CIDB. CFO, can you assist us with the... I know that it's an area that we touched on, but it wasn't on the presentation, but we deliberated and we anticipated that there could be a question coming from the House on this. And just briefly, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think there's just three things that I want to comment on. One, on the issue of the sub-programs, because in terms of our presentation, all that we presented were the actual core programs, and there are sub-programs within the core programs. We have not given that information in terms of the slides. However, we can put that together and send it through to the committee. And then secondly, there was the issue around vacancies where I mentioned that the total staff complement is not necessarily the entire posts that are filled, as there are some that are non-funded. What I just need to mention is that, just in a nutshell, some of the ones that are not filled are posts that have been identified during the previous year for the 2014-15 strategic planning session that we needed to prioritize on those specific posts. Those posts some of them are currently being evaluated in terms of their job profiles, and those are an example. We mentioned that Mr. Makubela is currently acting as a planning manager. He is, his responsibility right now is that of overseeing issues of governance, audits, and risk. However, he's also assisting with planning. So we have prioritized that we need to have a senior manager for planning and as well as for monitoring and evaluation. And that particular post is under recruitment. We have advertised for it, and it will be filled soon. And there are other posts that were vacant. For instance, I think there was one in Mpumalanga province, a provincial manager, they moved to Northwest due to a resignation in Northwest. So that post is currently being filled as well. And we've also identified that we need to also employ a senior manager to assist with legal services as well as the assistant. Currently, that service is being outsourced, where we seek external assistance in terms of legal issues, but we are currently evaluating that particular post. And there are several others where that are much junior in terms of us just augmenting the structure in terms of data capturers and so forth. So that's basically that. And then in terms of the employment equity target, we had prepared something. So with your permission, Honourable Chair, if I can circulate that so that members can look at the specific information. What I'll circulate is the focus will largely be on page 8 and page 9 of the slides. It basically gives us, in terms of the occupational levels, where how many people we have at top management, senior management, and how many are males, how many are females, and so forth. And it also tells us, out of the total staff complement, how many of those positions are permanent, how many are fixed-term contracts as well as temporary employees. So with your permission, Honourable Chair, we can pass this around so that members can have a look. It's mainly on page 8 and page 9 in terms of that particular information. Thank you, Chairperson.
Madam, thank you very much. I don't recall you speaking to the two figures, the 80 million as opposed to the 88 million.
My sincere apologies, Chair. With the two figures, the correct figure is actually the one on page 15, which is 80 million, which is what I mentioned earlier when I was presenting. What is shown in 88 is where we're saying we're reconciling issues of performance targets as well as budget. What we did and included in page 88 is a provision for bonuses. Because for the past 2 years, we've had a CCMA settlement agreement where we've had to pay guaranteed bonuses. So we basically factored that in terms of the other figure. But the actual compensation of employees is 80 million.
Thank you. As we move forward, the clearer exposition and articulation as you have done would be in order, then it would be much easier to follow what you have said. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. There was a question on the role of the NHBRC as well as the role of the CIDB. Simply put, the role of the NHBRC is to ensure that the houses that are built, by houses, the top structure, the four walls and the roof, are actually up to date in terms of quality. They do not grade contractors in their processes, but they look at the capacity of the contractor and give them a certificate that they are capable of doing a house in terms of the housing projects that are packaged. Whereas the CIDB on the other side is looking at the infrastructure in general and does not include the building of the houses in this mandate. So the contractor may be registered with NHBRC but not registered with the CIDB. And if now the contractor is only registered with the NHBRC, they cannot undertake any other work rather than building the top structure, that is the top part of the housing. They cannot do the civil engineering, the earthworks, and so forth, besides building only the house. Now, there is a disjuncture here that we have identified together with NHBRC, because some of the contractors that come in to build houses, they start with the infrastructure itself and then build the house, which is now the gap between the two processes. So this is the partnership that we're tightening to make sure that there are no contractors that fall between the cracks in terms of registering with NHBRC and registering with the CIDB and the respective roles of these two institutions in the service delivery. Chairperson, there is a question on the annual report which dates back to 2009, 2010, 2011, and so on. And in terms of this, there are deliverables that are seen since 2009 to be carrying over to the subsequent years. Most definitely, there will be deliverables, Chairperson. For instance, if we talk transformation, we cannot commence transformation in 2002 and say we are comfortable in 2013 or 14. I think there will be progression that takes place. But then the extent of difference is very important, as the Honourable Member has put it, to say we should demonstrate the extent of to what stage have we moved from one financial year to the other. And we are prepared to put it in place and put it on record, Chairperson, as to what progression has actually taken place within the MTF cycle. It's the information that we haven't brought with us, because we came to present the strategy as well as the APP for the one financial year only. And I'm sure that since we have recorded it, we will put it in mind as the CFO has done, because the issue of the demographics within the CIDB came on the previous interaction with the portfolio committee that has gone now. But we felt, because it was flagged then, let's prepare for it going forward. So we will do the same in terms of issues that have been raised today, to say this is an issue, let's go back with it. Even if the presentation is for something else, but we will prepare enough to be able to touch on the issues that you have raised here. Time and again, the issue of youth, women, and people with disabilities in construction has been raised, and I've alluded previously to it. There was a question about an 11 million budget on anti-corruption. And I think in terms of our presentation, the 11 million on the programs was not solely for anti-corruption, CFO, if I'm accurate. I think it was for the entire program that is doing the monitoring, the evaluation, supporting procurement systems within client departments and so on. So it wasn't just an amount that's geared at looking at corruption. The budget is for the entire program, but sub element of that program is dealing with corruption and also making sure that we follow through by action on what we have done. And it is an area that we were cautioned to bring to this house in the next visit, Honorable Member. Again, Honorable Member Masango raised the issue of the CIDB and NHBRC, the difference thereof. In terms of the current state, yes, the house is not in order between the two of us. Hence, we have put it there as a deliverable for us to start working together and closing the gap between the two. Also, the register of projects in terms of the private sector, there is no obligation on the private sector to put their projects onto our database as yet, Honorable Member. We're still battling, to be honest and frank, we're still battling with public sector clients to upload projects. And I can bring compliance figures of how do we fare in terms of uploading projects onto the register of projects. And I must say that there has been extensive improvement with the departments that we have started to make contact with, and also pointing out that this is an issue that is that needs to be taken through in terms of our prescripts as the CIDB. And since our prescripts our policy, government policy, then we are able to go to Treasury, to the Auditor General, and raise a query in terms of this. And to those that we have done so, it has really worked in that each department doesn't want to have a query, and they have actually come close to us, come for training, and also had interventions in place to improve the registration of projects on our database. There are a lot of companies that have registered with the CIDB that are not progressing, that are standing still, for a variety of reasons. Some of the companies do not have the funding, some of them do not have a flow of projects to sustain them throughout. But what we're finding also is that contractors who come through the system rely only on the public sector jobs for their sustenance. It is incumbent upon us to inculcate a culture where people who have gone through training really develop the business acumen of construction, wherein they take this as their own and not expect to be, babysat in terms of progression, but become business people who go out there, look for jobs, small and big, by themselves, and be complemented by government efforts, rather than sitting and saying, we will only tender, we will only do when the job is available. So I think it's incumbent upon CIDB to actually get that culture in, and also with our support, it should be a startup rather than a consistent a support for the contractors and for their existence as such. Chairperson, in terms of grading of contractors, most of the contractors are stuck on the same grade. I think this is the case in terms of contractors that are capable of doing a certain amount of job are given a certain amount of grade. I think it would be irresponsible of CIDB to give grading, as grading in its nature is a measure to mitigate risk to the clients, that is to the government departments and entities. Because once we give the grading, we have done the assessment, then it means the client is satisfied that this contractor can do this work. I think ours really is the contractor development, to say how do we get that going, as well as the flow of work, such that contractors do progress to certain grades and to higher grades in terms of the work that they do. But moreover, contractors themselves now have to take the bull by its horns and actually start doing or contracting themselves. And the market out there, I must say, is very competitive, highly competitive. If one contractor gets substantial amount of work this year, there's no guarantee that in the next 3 years they will get equal number, because there are so many contractors and they compete in a very wide space in a highly, competitive environment. Honorable member Fildane spoke extensively about the fact that we seem to be passing the buck, and I take the point in that some of the fundamental responsibilities that we have to carry out are dependent on others to do something for us to be able to deliver, and I think this element and all of the comments that come from there, really, in terms of also the contractor development, that is only championed by CIDB, yet there is no program within CIDB to actually make sure to see this through. It's something that I think we need to take to our strategic planning with the board and look at this with a magnifying glass. And I think this is opportune time with the incoming board and the new portfolio committee that's coming in. It's an opportune time for us to reflect really at where we come from and what do we want to achieve in the term of this administration. And I think it's something that we must take very, very seriously with the board. Also, the issue of transformation. We've got statistics of where we come from. We've got statistics of where we are right now. But it could be easy to put targets based on the current norm and the current flow from where we come from. But we need to go beyond that. We need to look at what we are able to do and what we're not able to do in terms of targets for transformation within the construction industry. Because if we only follow the trend, we will not be in a space where we need to be radical in terms of pushing the mandate of transformation and making sure that we change the landscape of the construction industry. The issue of payments, we understand there are so many disputes between contractors and subcontractors. And for some of us who have worked in construction sites, some of them are really, you know, disputes that could be prevented, disputes that could be mitigated. But because there's a David and Goliath, you know, kind of scenario, the smaller contractors and the subcontractors, they get bullied by the bigger contractors. It's something we cannot run away from. It is there. At some point, we did a study recently with CIDB of looking at also under pressure of this situation. We looked at a study of establishing an ombudsman, because going to court for subcontractors and small contractors is very expensive. So this is something that we looked at, but the results and the outcome of that study was not so positive. And we had to look at other means, and this is something that is receiving our attention, Honorable Sultane. And I'm sure once we've got all of our study completed and we've got recommendations, we can come back and make a submission on this matter. Particularly having looked at the issue of trying to establish an ombudsman of sorts that can mediate on all these disputes that come about through contracting in our construction space. The input from Honorable Ms. Adams, in terms of acronyms, we have noted, madam. Thank you very much. Also, raising the same sentiments about youth, gender, and people with disabilities in terms of transformation, we will bring back to this house our statistics of where we come from and what our targets going forward would be. Also, in terms of our objectives, the objectives that you see here are all under the strategic planning, as well as the APP for the coming financial year. But where I think we need to tighten is to say, if an objective is a multi-year objective, how do we break it down in terms of MTF or budget years to say we will do so much percentage for the current financial year and the next, so that we see the end of the objective rather than just tackle the objective in its entirety and you don't see the end of it. Thank you very much, Chair. Those are the questions that I've registered. I don't know if I'm leaving any.
Thank you for your response, sir. We did say that due to the constraints of time, we'll try and keep the questions and the response to this particular round of questions. In your future engagement, there's just one issue that I would like you to also speak about with regard to skills training. There's the issue of the department's workshops, the process of opening those workshops so that they are functional, as opposed to always having to insource people to train. But if we have our public works workshops that are open, then those functions can be carried out by public works employees on a permanent basis. The other issues that we have obviously said would leave to the next encounter when we engage, where members will surely have other questions and comments to make, and you surely also have the opportunity for a rejoinder with fuller answers. But for now, I think this is how far we can traverse down this road this morning. I would like to thank you for your presence here and the engagement that we have had thus far. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We'll now take our next presentation, obviously that of the Council for the Built Environment, and thank you for your patience.
Are you going to leave now?
No.
But yeah, my phone, and maybe you and she could use the rest of it. Okay. Chairperson, if you would excuse me.
Excuse the Deputy Minister, and thanks for your presence and your very able role as a short shot.
Yes.
Madam, you are in your very able hands, and
thank you very much, Honorable.
Someone kindly close the door.
And Honorable Members, I've got a touch of flu. Forgive me if my voice fades into the distance. I'll try and pick up speed because of the constraints of time that we have. Perhaps just as an introduction and an overview of what CBE is. We are a statutory body that was established through the Act of Parliament 2000, number 43, with the key role of overseeing six professional councils. Those professional councils are the Council for Engineers, for Architects, for Construction and Project Managers, for Landscape Architects, for Property Valuers, and for quantity surveyors. We have a 20-member board appointed by the Minister of Public Works, as per our act. And unlike the CIEDB, we didn't enclose our structure, but we've got 32 positions within our structure. So we are a very, very small organization with a 41 million budget for this current financial year. I'll start on page 4 by just summarizing the mandate, the key activities that are defined in the Act that paints our mandate. And the first one being a promotion of the public interest in the built environment. And perhaps I need to just define what the built environment is. The built environment is any structure that is human-made. So we talk about the built environment. It refers to any structure that is human-made. It includes construction, it includes infrastructure within its definition. We're also tasked to maintain a sustainable built environment. We're tasked to make sure that there's human resource development and training within the built environment. We are to make sure that the built environment professions, the six that I mentioned, are aligned in their activities to realizing the national goals of the country. We task with ensuring health and safety and environmental protection in the built environment. We also task to serve as a forum for built environment professionals to discuss relevant issues and to make sure that the uniform norms and guidelines are applied throughout the built environment. Page number 5 is an extract from the Minister's policy statement that he delivered on the 20th of June, the Friday the 20th of June 2014, to the senior management of the department and also to this committee at the last presentation of the Department of Public Works. And what we took
which was very relevant to us from the minister's policy statement, is transformation and intensified and extensive phase of radical transformation that he talked about. Talking to that, there is at the moment gazetted the policy that the department has come up with, which is the policy on the built environment, which seeks to transform the built environment to align to the development objectives of the country. Coming to the mission and the vision of the CDE, on slide 6, it's a simple vision that says we want an environment that is built to meet people's needs and aspirations, and we want to implement projects and programs that address built environment issues and add value to the built environment profession, government, and the general public. We've outlined 4 strategic goals, and perhaps if I could take you to slide number 8, where we state the strategic goals and we give some meat to that particular strategic goal. The first one talks about supporting government priorities with regards to the built environment matters. There we're looking at making sure that we have a CDE that is responsive and capacitated to respond to government built environment priorities. Those include infrastructure delivery, health and safety in construction, environmental sustainability, job creation, and of course transformation. The second strategic goal talks to skills development and making sure that we've got competent built environment professions, because the built environment professions that we oversee are actually an asset for the country. If you look at the infrastructure rollout program of government, at the center of the infrastructure rollout program are the built environment skills. And also, the other issue where the built environment skills are central is actually service delivery. If you look at in different municipalities, you look at service delivery projects, the issues that are at the heart of those projects are issues like a lack of access to clean water, proper sanitation, proper roads, proper electricity, proper houses, and those are all built environment products. So if we look at these professionals and professions at the heart of service delivery are these particular skills that are needed by the country to ensure service delivery. Our third strategic goal talks to information, research and knowledge with regards to built environment issues. And our fourth strategic goal, which also talks to our fourth program in our APP, looks at public protection and issues of legislation, the mandate that we have with regards to legislation regarding the built environment professionals and profession. We've outlined our key priorities on slide 9. First of all, being to align CBE to the government's development priorities. that talks to program one. Program two, we're talking about skills development initiatives, and we start these skills development initiatives from a school level, basic education level, through to tertiary education, up to the point when people are professionals that are practicing, making sure that they are properly skilled and that they are skilled and aligned to the needs of the country, delivery needs of the country. The third program talks about research and information on the built environment, and the fourth program talks about our regulatory work and our monitoring work with regards to the built environment profession. Page 10 further elaborates on our program and how the program relates to the goals and objectives that we mentioned. I'd like us to move to slide 11, where we now zoom into the specific program. And we will start with program number one. Remember that program number one is the one that says it's those programs that are aligned to broader government built environment objectives. Within the first project or deliverable looks at skills that are going to support government infrastructure delivery program. We know that within the SONA, within the budget vote of the Minister of Finance, the issue of government infrastructure rollout is a very, very key issue. There are trillions of rands. There's a program that government is to roll out in terms of infrastructure. What we're doing there is that our central role is that of coming up with a skills plan for the country to say that for these programs to be successfully delivered, these are the skills that we have in the country. This is the depth. This is the number of skills that we have. These are the gaps, and these are the mechanisms that we're going to use to plug in those gaps. The skills plan for the infrastructure delivery program of government is championed by the Department of Higher Education and Training. But we are responsible for all the professionals that are required. And those professionals, I must mention that they involve professionals beyond the six that I've mentioned or the six that we oversee. Anyone who's a professional, be they a CA, be they an environmentalist, etc., if they are going to be part of the delivery program, the infrastructure delivery program of government, the CBE is the body that oversees that those skills are mobilized. And there's an understanding of what the country has got and what the challenges are. The second project that we have is the project of supporting health and safety initiatives in construction. Last year, we, in partnership with the Department of Labor, CIDB was also involved, and the Department of Public Works, there was a construction health and safety accord that was signed between the Minister of Labor, the Minister of Public Works, organized business and organized labor within the construction sector. What our specific role as CBE? What we're doing is we are making sure that health and safety in construction becomes part of the modules at tertiary level when professionals are trained, because at the moment there are gaps in terms of training the professionals. We want to make sure that there are modules that talk to health and safety so that before they are even unleashed into the workplace, they already have a strong base of health and safety in the work that they are going to do. Same with environmental sustainability. There's a project that the Department of Public Works is responsible for,
we are participants in the Green Building and Energy Efficiency Initiative of the department. With regards to job creation, our specific role is to make sure that we inculcate labor-intensive construction in the work that professionals do. Because in the design of the work, of the construction work, we need to make sure that at a design level, at a delivery level, we incorporate job creation. And we have a problem that the professionals, they really think, you know, the thing of insistence of labor creation is just an irritation. And we are there to make sure that we want them to be very deliberate in telling us in their design how are they going to make sure that there is job creation. How are they going to make sure that there is skill transfer in the people that are involved? Because they control the value chain in terms of construction. With regards to transformation, I'm going to talk to the specifics of the transformation program that we have. And with regards to and number six, we want an unqualified audit report for the coming year. We've had an unqualified audit report. The next slide is just a quarterly outline of the yearly targets that are amplified on slide 11 for program one. And if we could go to program two, which is the program that deals specifically with skills initiatives that we have within CBE. There, we are looking at a methods and science support program at a basic education level, because before you can produce an engineer, you need to go back to basic education, to math and science at that level. So what we've done is we've formulated a program that supports math and science. We've selected the schools in four provinces, Limpopo, Gauteng, Northwest, and Free State. And we're supporting the students with math and science. We are also going to have a program in the remainder of the provinces, mid-year, to look at mobile science labs in the remaining provinces, that is KZN, Eastern Cape, the ones that are not mentioned with the math and science rollout program. So that's what we're doing in order to grow our timber, that is to prepare to cultivate our own engineers and architects, etc., from an early age. We also are looking at workplace training and structured candidacy. You will realize that one of the key difficulties that we have in this sector is that when people finish university and they go into the workplace, we've got tremendous challenges in that we don't have control over the workplace. And in the workplace, it is alleged that if you are black and you are female, you are sidelined, you are made to run errands, and you don't do the work that is going to make you a competent professional that is able to register. So we've come up with interventions that, two and three are interventions that are targeted at making sure that in the workplace we've got a sense of what is happening in the workplace, that there is quality assurance in terms of the work that people do, etc. So those are three and four. And we also are having a program that looks at the academic institutions and the academic programs, that is the universities and the universities of technology, whereby every second year the engineers, the architects, all the professional councils would go to institutions to look at the curricula, to look at the facilities, to look at the lecturers, et cetera, the quality of the lecturers, to make sure that what those institutions produce is quality and are relevant graduates for the country. We also will be doing monitoring work in, with regards to registration of professionals. I have said that we have a problem with regards to registration. I will talk to the statistics when I'm talking about transformation with regards to the challenges we have with registration of professionals. Slide 14, details per quarter, the deliverables that are aligned to the to program 2, which is the skills program. Program 3 is the program on research and information. One of the roles that we have as the CBE is to advise the minister, specifically it says advising the minister on built environment issues. Now to be a capable advisor, you need proper information to say to the country that as you're planning for infrastructure, this is what we have as a country, these are the gaps, this is what we need to prioritize for the country. We need that research and information to guide policy making within the built environment. So we want to have a research and information hub on built environment issues. We are also looking at specific research areas that are, first of all, number 2 is research issues that are pertinent to the built environment, the 6 professional built environment professions, professional councils. we're looking there at SADC and built environment qualifications within SADC and assessment thereof. We're looking at a worldwide to just check how are these professions internationally and in the African continent, how are they regulated? We are also looking at research issues that are a priority to PCW. We're looking at built environment issues that impact on service delivery. I did say that at the center of service delivery issues are our products as the built environment. What we did last year is that we had a technical capacity assessment of 13 largest municipalities in the country with regards to how many engineers that they have as opposed to the population. And the result of the study was actually very, very... It was very, very scary, because you would find that in a place like Mthatha, for example, you've got 1 million people, you don't have a city engineer responsible for that municipality. So the situation differs according to different municipalities. Fourth program talks to public interest and our legal role. We as the CBE are the final appeals body in the built environment. So if there's any misconduct of a professional, the first area that a person, an aggrieved person goes to is the respective professional council. And if they cannot resolve the issues at that particular professional council, then the matter comes to CBE. And we've had challenges in the past, as you'll see in our annual reports, that we're not able to finalize appeals within the 60 days as per the Act. And now we have a target of making sure that all the appeals are processed and finalized within 60 days. and we've been happy in the past financial year. For the first time, we've been able to achieve this target. With regards to best practice for disciplinary issues, investigations, appeals at the six professional councils, because of the problems within those councils, that was one of the reasons why we couldn't finalize our work, because the matters come already with problems to our level. So what we have now done is to have a best practice model so that at source, issues of investigations, issues of disciplinary proceedings, etc., are properly dealt with. We also are running a program with the Competition Commission, which is called the Identification of Work. Now, identification of work is basically ensuring that the work that is done by a particular professional is done by a professional that is competent to undertake that work. So that's what we're doing with the Competition Commission. For all the five built environment professional councils, as well as we have the engineers, because engineers are actually 70% of the professionals that we have. So they're the bulk of, the numbers are very, very big. They're the bulk of the professionals that we have. We also are looking at corporate governance within the six built environment professions, because there are corporate governance issues within the six council. So those are our four programs and the four key deliverables for the CBE. In terms of governance, the slide, I've mentioned that we have 20 members that have just been appointed council members, and we have 32 staff members. The financial information, the CFO will go through that, but perhaps before he does that, maybe let me just finalize the total presentation, so that the financial information talks to the total activities that we have. On page 25, we've got bullets that say, you know, what are the enablers that we have. The alignment to national priorities, I must say that actually it has not always been like that with CBE. If you look at our strategic plans in prior years, we had strategic plans that were just talking to themselves. But you would see that recently our work is more and more aligned to government priorities. We have a business plan for 5 years. We have very active support and involvement of the Department of Public Works. Our key challenges that we have and risks that we have are on page 26. The first one being dependency on third parties to deliver on our key mandate. We have a very, very big challenge in terms of transformation. Slow pace of transformation, commitment to transformation, but I'm going to elaborate on that. Research, I did mention that to be an effective advisor, we need research infrastructure, and we lack the resources there. And the legal issue that is key in our area, which is going to come through to this committee, is the built environment policy that suggests that our act be repealed and a different business model be put forward So there will be elaboration of that initiative by the Department of Public Works. Now, the slide 27 to 30, I'd like to take this opportunity to really go into detail because it outlines the transformation issues and the specifics with regards to transformation and the issues that we're dealing with. I did mention that in our sector, we have a challenge in that to produce a construction manager or a professional, you, on page 27, you have a challenge in that you've got challenges at basic education with regards to math and science. I did mention the programs that we're busy with to address that situation. When it comes to university level, the study by the CSIR also shows that out of the people that register in the built environment professions, we only have 30% that graduate. So the 70% never graduate. And then within the 30% that graduate, we have a huge challenge in that those people, for them to translate into registered professionals, I did mention that we have challenges in the workplace where people allege that they don't do relevant work. We have problems with the professional councils themselves in terms of assessment of the readiness of the person. It is alleged that those assessment mechanisms by professional councils are not standardized, they are not objective, they are discriminatory, etc., etc. So we have those challenges. If you look at the statistics at the bottom of page 27, you'll see that with the registered professionals, we've got 75% that are white and only 25% black. And out of the registered professionals, 91% of them are male and only 9% are female. That is the picture of the professionals that we have. And that talks to a person when a government infrastructure tender comes out. That pool is the only pool that can go and do the work. The other people are candidates. Those are people that have graduated from the tertiary institutions but are not registered as professionals, so they can't sign off the work. So they it's sort of a pupillage stage. And you see here that lots of people are stuck at the candidacy phase. So our interventions are saying, okay, the problem is with the workplace. Because in the workplace is what enables you to come and present yourself as a competent, registerable professional. So because we don't have a handle about what is happening in the workplace, that is where the problem is. And page 30 talks to a model for the workplace, but before I can go to the model for the workplace, I just want to take the meeting through slide 29, which is the transformation implementation model for the built environment profession. Now, this transformation implementation model looks at the skills value chain. I did say that you need to start at a school level up to the existing professionals to make sure that you address the challenges of the sector. So what we've achieved is that we have a transformation framework that was approved in May last year. And within that transformation framework, we've just developed this transformation model. And the transformation model, we've said that our transformation is going to be anchored on skills development initiatives. We're saying the proposed structure is going to be a public-private partnership, an NPO that is structured along the lines of Tutuga. For those that are familiar with chartered accountants and how they have fostered transformation within in producing Black CAs, it's a similar kind of model that we are adopting, but of course we're tailor-making it to the built environment or the construction sector. We're saying that it would have representatives from CBE, DPW, higher education and training, infrastructure departments of transport, energy, those departments, because they also use the same skills that we're using. Then the private sector. One of the key areas of intervention would be at a school level, where we are going to make sure that there's this math and science upliftment program, there's math and science teacher support program, career awareness program. We are also looking at a tertiary level, at a centralized bursary scheme for students, because we're saying that the country has committed over 3 trillion rands for infrastructure development. Now, we need a very clear support of students that must be involved in this infrastructure rollout. So we need a central bursary scheme. At the moment, we've got different companies doing their different things in a very ununiform way. What we now want is to have a central bursary scheme with policies and how we will support the students. The issue of the lecturers and the programs at universities last year, you'll see in our annual report, we, the CBE, we intervened at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, where they had closed the program on country surveying and construction management because of the lack of funding, and we went to the construction sector, and we have successfully enabled those two programs to be reopened at the University of UKZN. We also want research with the academic institutions and industry and government, so that the research that goes on feeds into what government is doing and what industry is doing, such that, you know, academic research doesn't just remain theoretical, but it's practical and useful for the country. We are looking at a workplace training program. I'm going to elaborate on that. We are looking at registered professionals, because once people are registered, we also want them to stay in the sector. What we have now is that people do MBAs and then they go work for banks, and we don't have engineers to run projects. So we want to make sure that people remain in the sector. It is attractive for people to remain in the sector. The fifth one is a very important one, which talks to specifically the public sector and the professionals within the built environment, professionals within the public sector. We want to make sure that the best people and the best engineers are actually in the public sector, because the bulk of the projects are actually driven in the public sector. Now, at the moment, we have a situation whereby at a municipality, you get somebody who is underqualified, having to be told by the person that they are employing, the consultant that they are employing, what to do. So the person that is supposed to monitor tells you what you must monitor them on, and it's a very, very, it's a serious state of affairs. But what we want to do is to make sure that the people in the public sector are capacitated so that they are able to champion and drive the infrastructure delivery of government. Just as a statistic, the work, the research that we've done from 1969 up to year 2011 with regards to infrastructure spend and building spend between the public sector and the private sector, and the highest that public sector work has ever been, has been 32%. So 70% of the work that is done in the construction space come from government. So it's very important that the professionals within the public sector are capacitated. Now, in terms of workplace training, what is it that we're going to do differently? That model, that many color model on page 30 is what we're proposing to do in the workplace. We've identified key departments as workplace training partners. Those are the departments of Water Affairs, ESCOM, Transnet, BRASA, SANRAL, DPW, and Human Settlements. We're saying that we want to use the projects from these departments to train people appropriately and relevantly so that we can produce competent professionals. And we want people to be able to be given an opportunity to rotate within the different areas of infrastructure, because what we have right now is that depending on who employs you, you become, if you are employed by SANRAL, you just become an engineer that knows how to do roads. And when there is now SIP number 18 that talks about the water infrastructure in the country, although you are trained as a civil engineer, you've never done any work since you left university, so your 20 years of experience doesn't help the country. So we want people to be exposed to different major infrastructure areas in their training, and we want a quality assured workplace training and assessment regime, and we believe that if people go through this system, they will be able to register as professionals, and they will be competent professionals, and as a country, we will be confident that we've got competent professionals out there. Thank you, Chair. I'll give over then, with your permission, to the CFO to take us through the financial.
Madam, thank you very much. You may do so. I think it will be easier if he approaches a mic. You said his designation is?
He is the interim CFO.
The interim CFO?
Yes.
I can see he has not used the entity's funds nor his own to buy a tie. You may proceed, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair, and the honorable members. I think we'll revert back to slide number 21, where we highlight the CBE's historical performance in terms of our targets that we've achieved and the ones that we have not achieved. Now, in 2011-12, we had managed to achieve only 59% of our targets, as indicated on the APP, and 41% of those were not achieved, but we're still able to obtain an unqualified audit report. In 2012-13, we had increased our achieved targets to 71%, and only 21% were not achieved, but we obtained an unqualified audit report. Now, in the prior years, which is 2013-14, we managed to achieve an 86% achievements of our targets, and only 14% were not achieved. And I'm happy to say that we were still able to maintain our unqualified audit report status. If we move to slide 22, where there's now an overview of our budget, as well as our MTF estimates. Now, the CDE's revenue basically is categorized in three different line items, which is the grant that we get from the Department of Public Works, worth 41.5 million, and there's also interest that we accumulate on on the invested unused funds during the year, which is estimated at around 150,000 rands. And there's also levy income that we get from the professional councils of about 1.8 million. Now, the entity has a total revenue budget of about 43.5 million for the 2014-15 financial year. Now, there has been increases if we compare what we have in the year 14-15 against the 13-14 financial years. In terms of the grant, there's only been a 10% increase, which was a movement from 37.9 in 13-14 to 41.5 in 14-15. Now, in terms of our interest income, we've estimated only a 7% increase from 140,000 to 150,000. In terms of the levy income, we've estimated around 5% increase, which would be from 1.7 million to the 1.8 million. Now, when you compare the total revenue, there is an increase when you compare it to the prior year's one from the 39.8 that's indicated on the slide and the total to the 43.5. So there's a 9% increase overall. Now, if we move to the next slide, which is on page 23, there we indicating what we spend this money on in terms of our overall consolidated budget, and then we further break it down in terms of the relevant programs that we have, the four programs that the CEO has already spoken about. Now, if you look at our overall budget for compensation of employees, it has increased from prior year of 17.5 to the 19.1, which is about 9% increase. Now, that increase in itself would obviously factor the normal salary increases of employees, your performance bonuses, as well as staff benefit and welfare. And in the year 14-15, we obviously don't expect to increase employees. So therefore, our expenditure is kept, around the same bracket with just the factoring of the normal salary increases in that year. Now, if you look at the increase on goods and services, we moved from 19.9 million to 21.4, which is about 7% increase. And there's also professional services, where we had 1.9 million in the prior year, and in the 14-15 we've got 2.5, which now also has about 32% increase on that line item, and also capital assets, where we increased them from 330,000 to 370 in the 14-15 financial year, which gives you about 12% increase on that one. Now, in terms of the programs that we have, looking at the first one being the government policies and priority program, on an overall program level, it has increased from 16.7 million to 19.1 basically, which is about a 13% increase. And obviously, it would factor a number of things like under this program, you're looking at your inflationary increases, where you'd be looking under the compensation of employees. And there's also for goods and services where we also catering for the new council that we have, in terms of obviously additional meetings or sittings that we would encounter in the first year of inauguration and the forms of training that would be needed under that line item. And there's also, if we move now to the next slide, which is on page 24, where we're indicating our overall budget as well for the program 2, which is the one for Skills Academy or Skills Development. There we had a budget of 8.4 million in the prior year, and in the current year it's about 8.6, indicating just a 2% increase in that program. And in terms of your program 3, research, there has been a 6% increase, which is from the 10.3 to the 10.9 in the current financial year. And on our last program, which is public interest, we have an increase of about 16% from 4.2 to 4.8 in the current financial year. Now, in terms of the specific expenditure line items, we are the CBE spends its budget as follows in terms of the specific line items of expenditure. Now, 44% would be spent on your personal costs, and in your administration, we're spending about 19% of the total budget, and for program expenditure, we're spending about 30%. And professional and special services, we're spending about 6%, and only 1% is allocated for capital assets. And that would be my short presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your contribution. So that takes us to is there something you need to add, CEO? Okay. Honorable members, this takes us to your time to shine with your questions and comments.
Okay, I just want to check with you whether is it going to do us justice with the questions, maybe. I'm just checking with you.
I think let's take one or two questions and then just round off. I'm very much aware it's 1 o'clock. This is what you are referring to, the time, yeah. And then obviously you have heard us. We have said that we will give you the requisite time to engage with you so that we have a whole day, so at least you can't come here just to make your presentation and say thank you and go. At least let us have one or two questions, even if other members just raise issues that you don't answer immediately. At least for the next time we engage, you know what are the issues that you are interested in. I'll take the two members who have raised their hands, and thereafter I'll just ask, okay, I'll also take you. We'll post questions and then we'll see what you can answer immediately. Others, our next engagement. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm just looking at the budget, you know, maybe things have changed in this institution. It has been building schools and all those things. I just want to find out if they're still going to do the same that they were doing before, where they were building schools. Like I can remember some schools that they were building in Eastern Cape, whether it was from their pocket or not. And I'm still aware that think as a CEO, you are also involved in Rock Ferreira, where the program is being stuck there. I just want you to comment on that one. So the other thing is, you know, they are talking about aligning their strategy with their priorities. But, you know, the government got some few priorities. If they can be specific to say, this priority we have aligned ourselves and this is what we, so we really understand which one, not just in general also. I'll just stop there because I think... Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have these two annual reports for the department. It seems, Chair, they are not prepared to transform the process of cancer. Really, they are not. Because if you check this 75% of whites. From 2010, we were talking about this percentage. There's not lacking, there's nothing that is happening in the department. In this sector, I don't know, Chair. I think, Chair, we have to follow your suggestion that they have to come back with some pieces, because when things are like this, it means we are going nowhere.
Thank you. Let's note the second contribution. Mr. Sellers?
Thank you, President. A message is in a geskok as we see the vlak van ontwikkeling van skills wat daar kort. En vooral die mate van transformatie wat ontbreekt. En ik zeg met die saam, achtbare voorzitter, dat ons definitief baie intieke hierna sal moet kyk. Ek wil te vraag op slide 24, daar is sê, daar is een cost-saving exercise. As daar een cost-saving exercise is, was daar een gehalte wat ontbreek het? Wat het aanleiding gegeven tot die cost-saving exercise in program 3 ten opzichte van goods en services? En ek sal ook graag wil hee, as ons meer uitbreid wat by jou is goed en services. Dank u, voorzitter.
Thank you very much. Mr. Adams, could you take this? The letter, it's okay, I wanted to do something, but you can send it to them. May I just point out before they respond, just that the Independent Development Trust is involved with the school building program. And I'm not sure if it's the function of the CBE, but you are here, you will speak for yourself. But that's my understanding. I was going to say that for the future engagement, we have spoken about program 2 with regard to math and science students and 150 students to be assisted with training, who would just be interested to know with regard to the selection program. And then there's also the issue of the 50 birth environment candidates. Again, the criteria for selection. And the workplaces where these interns would be placed. How do we achieve that, and what's the scope of the country by way of provinces? Are they from all provinces? Will they be allocated in one particular province, or this is the provincial spread? Yes, and then there's also the 100 that are to get experiential exposure. Also, the process of identifying it countrywide spread, are we paying that in mind? So that we don't only end up with the golden triangle all your students come from Johannesburg, Cape Town, or Durban, we should be able to go out to the other more rural provinces and also empower those. So if you could kindly see what questions you can deal with now, and then we'll wrap it up. Others will come back for fuller engagement.
Let me withdraw my first question. You know, I'll meet them with IDT. My first question. Yeah. Okay.
We sought to clarify that. Sure.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Masango's requirement for specifics on which government priorities we are aligned to, I tried to cover it on the slide where the minister has defined the outcomes that we specifically talk to. But I can elaborate on that, Chair. With regards to the Honorable Adams' questions, the CFO will talk to the top, the cost-saving exercise and what's in goods and services, etc. And I do take the point to have an in-depth in-look into transformation. The Honorable Sithole, the fact that the statistics are static, it is a fact. Transformation is not happening in the sector. But as I've explained, to produce an engineer, you have to start at basic education level. So what we need to demonstrate is what are the interventions that we are doing at all levels to make sure that there's transformation. And you'll see that in the 14-15 APP, we also have transformation targets from the 6 professional councils. Remember that we don't register anybody as the CBE. We're the regulator, we're the oversight body. The individual professional councils are the ones that specifically register professionals. But we've made sure that they come up with targets for transformation. And we engage them on those targets so that we have fresh targets. The minister talked about revolutionary and extensive and intensive transformation. So we have to unpack how we're going to move this time around in terms of the transformation numbers. It is a fact we haven't moved. Yeah, we haven't moved. But I think the correct thing to do would be to also invite the 6 councils to talk for themselves as to what is it that they are doing. Because we have presented what it is that we are doing. I would suggest that perhaps that should be a session that should be arranged. With regards to targeting, we, for math and science, we targeted, we took the Department of Basic Education's quantile system that says the no-fee-paying schools that are doing math and science. So we targeted according to the apartheid system. So the most underprivileged schools are the ones that we identified in all the provinces. In terms of the BE candidates, the selection criteria was according to, first of all, the sector. As I said, 70% of the professionals are engineers. So we took that into account in terms of the industry, followed by quality surveyors and construction and project managers. Those are the priority candidates. In terms of the geographical spread, we took
the candidates from a countrywide level. In terms of the workplaces, they are also spread geographically. We have a lot of concentration in Limpopo because we have a partnership with Eskom, with Lephalale and that power station. we also have quite a concentration in the Eastern Cape. Gauteng we do have, but I'll give the geographical spread of the workplaces, etc., etc. The same with the interns. Thanks.
Madam, thank you very much. Honorable members, it would seem that this is how far down we can go down this road today. I would like to thank you for the time that you have allowed us, and I'm very much aware also to the presenters that we have gone beyond the allocated time that we wanted to be. Thank you for everyone to have made this engagement a meaningful one. The next time we'll budget adequate time so that you can have a meaningful contribution to make by way of your presentations, and members can also be afforded the requisite time to interact with your presentation. Good folks, thank you very much for your time. Have a pleasant and joyous day further. Thanks.
Thank you.